envious, one who is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego, equal in both happiness and distress, always satisfied, forgiving and self-controlled, who is engaged in devotional service with determination, and whose mind and intelligence are dedicated to me, he is very dear to me. Report. One should not be jealous of members of other castes or nations. It is not that only Indians or Brahmanas can become Vaishnavas. Anyone can become a Vaishnava. Therefore, one should recognize that the bhakti cult must be spread all over the world. That is real Advaishta. Moreover, the word Maitra, friendly, indicates that one who is able to preach the bhakti cult all over the world should be equally friendly to everyone. These two and the following six verses were spoken by Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, 13 through 20. Text 108. Translation, he for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety, who is liberated from jubilation, anger, fear, and anxiety, is very dear to me. Text 109. A devotee who is not dependent on others, but dependent solely on me, who is clean inwardly and outwardly, who is expert, indifferent to material things, without cares, free from all pains, and who rejects all pious and impious activities, is very dear to me. Report. The word anapeksha means that one should not be concerned with mundane people and should not depend upon them. One should depend solely on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be free from material desires. One should also be clean, within and without. To be outwardly clean, one should regularly bathe with soap and oil. And be inwardly clean, one should always be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. The words Sarvarambha Parityagi indicate that one should not be interested in the so-called smartha vidhi of pious and impious activities. Next text, 110. One who neither rejoices nor hates, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things and who is devoted to me is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contamination, always grave and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, and who is fixed in devotional service, is very dear to me. He who thus follows this imperishable religious principle of Krishna consciousness with great faith and devotion, fully accepting me as the supreme goal, is very, very dear to me. From translation of 113. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms in charity? Do the rivers, being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves and the mountains now closed? Or, above all, does the unconquerable Supreme Personality of Godhead not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why, then, should learned persons, like devotees, go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? Report. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 225. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami advised Maharaj Parikshit that a devotee should be independent in all circumstances. The body can be maintained with no problem if one follows the instructions given in this verse. To maintain the body, we require shelter, food, water, and clothing. And all these necessities can be obtained without approaching puffed-up rich men. One can collect old garments that have been thrown out. One can eat fruits offered by the trees. One can drink water from the rivers. And one can live within the caves and mountains. By nature's arrangement, shelter, clothing, and food are supplied to the devotee who is completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee does not need a puffed-up, materialistic person to maintain him. In other words, devotional service can be discharged in any condition. This is the version of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, Sabai Pong Sang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radhak Sanjay Ahaitaki Pratyata Yatma Supersiyati. The supreme occupation, or dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. This verse explains that devotional service cannot be checked by any material condition. In the last text, thus Sanatana Goswami inquired from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about all the conclusive statements concerning devotional service, and the Lord very vividly explained all the confidential meanings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those verses. So, any questions, comments? Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Etad Vimana Pravaram Uttama Shloka Maulina Upashtapitam Ayushman Adirodhum Tvam Arhasi Etad Vimana Pravaram Uttama Shloka Maulina Upastapitam Ayushman Adirodhum Tvam Arhasi Etad Vimana Pravaram Uttama Shloka Malina Upastapitam Ayushman Adirodhum Tvam Arhasi. Etad Vimana Pravaram Uttama Shloka Maulina Upastapitam Ayushman Adirodhum Tvam Arhasi Etad Vimana Pravaram Uttama Shloka Maulina Upastapitam Ayushman adirodham tvamarhasi etat vimana pravaram utamashlokam avnina upastapitam ayushman adirodham tvamarhasi Personality of Godhead. Molina, by the head of all living entities. Upastapitam, sent. Ayushman, O immortal one. Adhirodham, to board. Tvam, you. Arhasi, are worthy. Translation, O immortal one, this unique airplane has been sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by selected prayers and who is the chief of all living entities. You are quite worthy to board such a plane. Purport, according to astronomical calculation, along with the pole star, there is another star, which is called Shishumara, where Lord Vishnu, who is in charge of the maintenance of this material world, resides. Shishumara, or Dhruvaloka, can never be reached by anyone but the Vaishnavas, as will be described in the following shlokas. The associates of Lord Vishnu brought the special airplane for Dhruva Maharaj, and then informed him that Lord Vishnu had especially sent this plane. Vaikuntha airplane does not move by mechanical arrangement. There are three processes for moving in outer space. One of the processes is known to the modern scientist. It is called Ka Pota Vayu. Ka means outer space, and Pota means ship. There is a second process also called Ka Pota Vayu. Ka Pota means pigeon. One can train pigeons to carry one into outer space. Please don't ask me anything about that. The third process is very subtle. It is called Akasha Patana. This Akasha Patana system is also material. Just as the mind can fly anywhere one likes without mechanical arrangement, so the Akasha Patana airplane can fly at the speed of mind. Beyond this Akasha Patana system is the Vaikuntha process, which is completely spiritual. The airplane sent by Lord Vishnu to carry Dhruva Maharaj to Shishumara was a completely spiritual, transcendental airplane. Material scientists can neither see such vehicles nor imagine how they fly in the air. The material scientist has no information about the spiritual sky, although it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Parastasmat Tabhavanya. I want to read the next verse also. The great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet. He immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Report, we should mark how dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service, even at the time he left this material world. He was constantly alert in the performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient as auspicious decorations to purify the body. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Bhadrika Ashram, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent by Lord Vishnu was waiting for him. As a humble Vaishnav, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the airplane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates. With this first verse, it's basically some technical information. And some philosophical points can certainly accompany. First, mention was made of the location of Dhruva Loka, very near the pole star. The scientists can see the pole star, but it cannot see, or to speak of calculate, the presence of Shishumara or Dhruva Loka. But there Lord Vishnu resides. And the managerial personality was carrying out the functions of management there is Dhruva Loka, a Dhruva. And as Prabhupada is saying, not only they can't see it, but they can't go there by any kind of material means, by any mechanical means. Therefore, the plane that was sent by Lord Vishnu himself, the conveyance was not material. So imagine the situation. Two residents of Vaikuntha appear in a transcendental airplane and invite, give, offer very nice words extolling his virtue and quality and explaining how you are such a fit person to return with us to Vaikuntha. He stops and goes and takes a bath and puts on his ornaments and performs his daily spiritual duties while the plane is parked there waiting. Pretty amazing. This is the qualification. This identifies the qualification of Dhruva. Of devotion becomes, Prabhupada uses the expression like etched in stone, something that just doesn't change. Very similar to the verses that we were just reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, quotes from Bhagavad Gita from the 12th chapter describing the qualities of devotional service, wherein nothing deters one on that position of devotion. This stage of pure devotional service is not something that can be imitated. We can certainly learn from the example. That's the purpose of these, one of the purposes of these informations that are being presented within the Bhagavatam, so that we know what is the exemplary standard of the pure devotion. As with Dhruva Maharaj, there's no question of Dhruva Maharaj's qualification. So what is, therefore, what is the need for him to take his bath, put on his different ornaments and markings of Lord Vishnu, and perform his daily devotional duties? We were discussing this point just yesterday evening in the village. Some of the guests. It's the point of duty. And Prabhupada describes this, the position of duty is a preliminary stage of love. Although in material standards, we certainly don't think of duty as something that's very lovely or lovable, or that you become so fond of it that you won't be able to do without doing your duty. In material life, certainly. You have this in the military, isn't it? Whatever the work is that you're supposed to do, that's your duty, the detail. You're on such and such detail, this is your duty, the duty station. Anyway, it has all kinds of bad connotations to it. If one is obliged out of duty to do something, then it's not very inviting or relishable. But duty, in relation to the personality of Godhead, does bring rise to a spontaneous position of performing the very same activities. Externally, perhaps, it can appear as if out of duty, as perhaps one might think of Dhruva Maharaj's activity, that he was simply doing out of duty. Of course, he wasn't doing out of duty. But the rigidity with which Dhruva Maharaj was performing at this stage just before going back to Vaikuntha is the same kind of fixity or strictness that one should perform duty in a neophyte stage, because that neophyte stage of duty gives rise to, eventually, to love of God, invoking the natural sentiment in relation to the personality of God. And devotional duties are designed that way by the Lord. Administered by the Lord's representatives. Because behind this idea of duty, there's also person. This is a very principal factor that differentiates material duty and spiritual duty, aside from the nature of those activities themselves. Who in the military is doing simply because they love their commander-in-chief or something. I love the lieutenant. He's such a nice guy. Whatever he wants me to do, I'll do it. However, in spiritual life, that is the principle. But progressively, that becomes the principle. At least one has to have sufficient intelligence to recognize, I don't know what is what. The position is described in Bhagavad Gita, that knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Knowledge in the mode of passion, one doesn't know what to do, what not to do. And that so-called knowledge in the mode of ignorance, one accepts what's not to be done as what is to be done. And those things that are to be done, those I shouldn't do, those I will not do. But one, when one comes to the position, at least in the mode of passion, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm bewildered. That's the position that Arjuna reached. While contemplating his own desires, first and foremost, he reached a state of bewilderment. Because the natural devotional sentiments become confused at that point. Then one has to have at least enough humility and enough intelligence to inquire. And when one inquires, one will get some response, and this is where the sense of duty comes. Because from that person who is giving that, from Krishna who is giving to Arjuna, then the understanding that is being imparted, of course, is voluntary, isn't it? We've been hearing this phrase a little bit here and there. Prabhu, devotional service is voluntary. This is true. Devotional service is voluntary. Just as Krishna offered the option to Arjuna at the end of Bhagavad Gita whether or not he would like to act according to the good advice of Lord Krishna or not. You consider very carefully and you do what you feel you must do. And this is the platform of devotional service. However, where does duty come in? Where does the consideration of duty fit in to voluntary aspect of devotional service? So duty is also voluntary. Duty is a sense of obligation for a lot of reasons, but behind those lot of reasons is person. One can calculate in this way that dutifully I will do because it's in my interest to do as I'm being obliged to do. Because I make out in the end. That doesn't sound very loving, sentiment, or reason. However, when they reason in that way, out of duty I must do. Because it's good for me. Four kinds of pious people render devotional service unto me, Lord Krishna says. So that's a bit in the position of distress. I want to avoid, I have enough intelligence that those activities that are distressful, I want to stop them. Therefore, I'll take these other things because I know they're not distressful. The problem with that kind of reasoning about duty is that when one's distress is mitigated, if one doesn't come to a higher platform, then what happens? My motivation was I don't want the distress. And then the distress is gone. So then you've got the open door again. Where one drops one's duty. Because it's no longer required for me to get rid of this distress. The distress is now gone. Thank you very much, Krishna. Now I'm on my merry way. But that sense of duty that endures beyond relieving oneself of a distressful situation or a potential distressful situation requires a little more intelligence than that. And a little more appreciation of that person from whom the instruction came originally to let me get rid of my distress. I now become obliged to that person who has helped me relieve myself of my distress. Krishna. When you can analyze in the same way, motivations that one takes up devotional service out of duty. The motivation of economic betterment, that's very similar and very easy to see. Once I have my economic thing together, thank you very much, goodbye, Krishna. Goodbye, duties. I don't need you anymore. I'll take it or not take it, according to how it fits my economic situation or my distress situation. Or a little above that is the curiosity platform. So once one's curiosity is satisfied, now I have my, like students that come and do their report. They get into it and read so many things and write their nice report, but they don't perform devotional duties. Some people do. Some people have become devotees in the strength of coming to the temple just as an academic concern. But once they start to understand what devotional service is, they gave their life and soul to that devotional service. Hare Krishna on the bench over there. My ball, Dina. Hare Krishna. And then the platform of knowledge. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that one who performs his activity in knowledge is more dear than the others. Of course, the pursuit of knowledge has its limit also. That's described in Prabhupada's purports as well as described very nicely in the Bhagavatam. Even one may have knowledge when they still act foolishly or not act according to the standard that Krishna gives, because these senses are very strong and impetuous. They don't give up. However, the Ahaituki Apratiyata platform is more powerful. But that's the position of causelessness, where one performs duty for some other reason altogether than I want something. But out of a sense of obligation to another, potentially, eventually, to God, to the Supreme Lord. And even one does so without full knowledge. If one has that sense of duty in a continuing way, that knowledge will come. This is described also in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satati yuktanam vajitam piti purvakam padami buddhi yogam tam. Prabhupada describes in that purport, even if a student of devotional service does not apply himself fully to those bodies of knowledge that the spiritual master makes available, if still, just by being sincere servant, Krishna from within the heart will give that knowledge. That does not mean we should not avail ourselves to all the knowledge that the spiritual master is giving, that Prabhupada has presented in his writings. But it does illustrate this other point, that devotional service is meant for Krishna. Krishna is receiving that devotional service. That's why duty is there, because it's pleasing to Krishna. That's why Dhruva Maharaj sat down, performed his spiritual duties, even while the Vaikuntha airplane is parked waiting for him, because his interest is simply to please Krishna. Those things that have brought Krishna into our lives similarly should never become neglected. And those persons who have helped us come to that point of hearing about Krishna and pulling ourselves out of the mire of material existence, that, as Prabhupada writes, that debt can never be repaid. One should feel a sense of obligation to Prabhupada for presenting his transcendental writings, and devote one's, in reciprocation, devote one's time, energy, etc. to serving. That's where duty comes in spiritual life. Once that sense of obligation becomes acknowledged by the devotee, then particular duty, this duty, that duty, another duty, that can be adjusted however. That's the undeterred part. Unmotivated and unchecked. It's not that duty, as the examples that are given in Bhagavad Gita again, that when it's very cold, one doesn't take bath, or When it's very hot, one doesn't go cook in the kitchen. That is too hot. I don't want to go in the kitchen. It's too hot. Somebody else can do it. But one's duty changes in that way. When one's duty changes in that way, that's not the proper platform. Because it may inconvenience me, I won't do it. But one should volunteer, if it means inconvenience or not inconvenience, one should be indifferent. But why? For the higher principle. Not simply that one should go on in a dull-headed way because that's the way it's supposed to be, so I'll just do it, and one never really understands. And then one will never stick. We'll never reach the platform Guru Maharaj reached. Even his initial motivation was also material. That's been described again and again in this section of the Bhagavatam. But he became purified from that material motivation. In performance of duty, he was told how to perform his search for Lord Vishnu, and he executed it. The reciprocation with the Lord followed, and Dhruva Maharaj never budged. For how many? 30,000 years? 33,000 years? Of course, this is Kali Yuga, and it's pretty hard for us to keep our minds fixed in one thing for 3 minutes. Given life expectancy, if we can maintain that position for 33 years, just stay in devotional service, follow regular principles, chant 16 rounds, and perform prescribed duties, perform activities. I mentioned this in the class recently, a point that Prabhupada made in a lecture right here in beautiful Brooklyn. Just perform prescribed activities or duties, activities that are authorized. Chant prescribed rounds, follow the principles, and you go back home, back to Godhead. Sounds awfully easy. However, it's not so easy, we see. People do come and go. So to prevent ourselves from going away, but instead to go back to Godhead, then this understanding of pure devotion has to be very clear, and we have to come to that standard. Even from the preliminary stage of duty, understanding properly how to execute duties, it's not for our pleasure. It's for Krishna's pleasure. That's what duty means. So what is Krishna's pleasure? How can I arrange my devotional service in such a way that Krishna will be pleased by that? How do I interact with others? In all the various ways that interacting with others is required in these temples as Prabhupada established them, created them, and wanted them to continue. How should I interact in such a way, performing my duty, that Krishna is pleased? That's my duty. That's what duty is. Devotional service is voluntarily performed. Voluntarily, we should want to do those things that Krishna will be pleased by, as best we can. What's Krishna's interest? To put that first. Dutifully. If we can somehow or other manage to do that, gradually our love for Krishna will become more than simply duty. But spontaneously, one will think, how will Krishna be pleased more? Not simply because one is told to think that way, but spontaneously one will begin thinking that way. And from within one's heart, Krishna will give the inspiration. And that can be confirmed by the other Vaishnavas, not just some speculative idea. And then our society will go on very, very strongly, very nicely. Not that as one becomes one of the points that Prabhupada is obviously pointing out here with this example is that when one becomes very, very advanced, a certain driver, we could say, without any problem, is most advanced Vaishnava. There's no question of neglecting duty, neglecting basic devotional activity. That is disqualification. That does not indicate one's qualification. So we have a little time for questions and discussion. Verses together is that the first is speaking about these different types of conveyance in this space by airplane, by pigeon carriers, and by subtle method. And then, in contrast, the spiritual airplane is altogether a different platform. So also this. In terms of devotional service, you can calculate duty in a material sense, but you always end up with something that has some motivation or some cause. With that cause and result, when the result is achieved, then it's over. It's a business deal, and that's not what the sense of duty in devotional service is. So yes, that sense of duty in the higher stages goes on. The sense of obligation to the spiritual master does not finish at any point. Prabhupada describes like that the relationship one has for Krishna can become more, has different rasas, can become more and more intense and to the point, to stages where one forgets that Krishna is God and treats him as friend, etc. However, that never position of awe and respect or veneration is eternally the relationship with one's spiritual master. So that sense of duty certainly can continue in higher stages. It becomes richer and fuller with loving feeling. That means it becomes less breakable, less fragile, less materially influenced. Influenced by time or condition. That's right. It's spontaneous. Just like with Ruben. anyone hear that point? Back there? No. The point that just, and also for the benefit of the devotees in the kitchen, Maritaksha is making a very nice point. First, the point about Daruka, who was fanning Krishna, and symptoms of ecstasy began appearing. Tears, quivering of body, and that was interfering with his fanning of Krishna. So he was trying to check the symptoms of ecstasy, because they were getting in the way of his service, which was the higher ecstasy. The other point was the idea of duty. For example, when one volunteers for duty in the military, or similarly, when one volunteers for duty to Krishna within the structure of the temple, that means so many varieties of duties have to be performed following that initial commitment. Once one makes the commitment of duty, some of the other duties will automatically follow that initial commitment. One thing that I thought, we were discussing this point the other day, and one thing I thought about that's kind of a balance to that is that surrender to Krishna is an ongoing thing. Devotional service is voluntary. However, one can volunteer, just like there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes that one Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sadhanam Samatitya Dhan Brahma Bhuyani Kompate. Thank you. The transcendental platform is at once achieved for one who takes shelter of Krishna, surrenders to Krishna, and acts in proper devotional service. However, in the next moment, one could be no longer in that transcendental position. There are so many examples that we can refer to, big and small, in our own experience, in our own devotional service, or in the devotional service of others. One can be transcendentally situated at one time, and then again later not transcendentally situated. That's a question of consciousness. So one can volunteer, just like if you sign up for the military, you sign up for a certain term. Once the term is over, you can renew it or not. And even in the midst of the term, if somebody changes their mind, they can get a whole lot of, you can be legally tossed in a clinker. Or if they want, they can just release you. Also, just by your just being a nasty or persnickety or whatever is required to get out of military, I guess I'll just discard you, forget it, we don't want you around at all. In devotional service, it's an ongoing voluntary thing. Surrender is an ongoing voluntary thing. So there's some difference there. And according to one's level of Krishna consciousness, or degree of Krishna consciousness, one will recognize the obligation that I have to Krishna to turn my life over to Krishna and put my life, place my life in Krishna's hands. And that's not a one-time volunteer. It's an ongoing voluntary act. To the degree that one does like that in an ongoing way, that's one's Krishna consciousness. It's dynamic. Or not dynamic. If one doesn't situate oneself on the spiritual platform, I surrender to Krishna. Thank you. bears a sense of duty there also, and duty is to Krishna. They don't care for other duty. That's the transcendental sense of duty. Mother Jasoda is thinking, Krishna is holding this Govardhan hill, but if I don't feed him, who knows, he may starve. And the gopis are thinking that if I don't give the dust for my feet, then Krishna's headache won't go away, and I don't care if I go to hell. I just care about Krishna. That's my duty. Certainly, higher sense of duty than religious formularies only. But that's not what we're talking about, duty in terms of religious formularies. Duty is in terms of devotional service. What does Krishna want? Let me do that. That's all. And I do it in the initial stage because somebody else is asking me. Prabhu, this is your duty. You have to do the arti. But. You have to cook the offering for Krishna. I feel, I've got some other things I was planning to do. Maybe ask around for the next hour and a half and see if you can find somebody else. If you can't find anybody else, I guess I'll do it. That's not duty. My transcendental sense of duty. What is Krishna like? One may have another higher service to perform. Another very important service to perform. That's duty. That's Krishna's interest. Well, those who are Krishna conscious care. Even they may or may not be able to see beyond their own devotional service into the devotional service of others. But at least that much responsibility one has to take. But Krishna's interest is my interest. Others may or may not care, and I may or may not try to influence others to also care more about what is Krishna's interest. I may or may not preach. Or may or may not try to set some, at least we can try to set an ideal example. And that's preaching. And that will influence. If that consciousness is genuinely there, then that will influence others to take up that consciousness also. It's very attractive. Ourselves, we just have to become more Krishna conscious. If the statement is true that you just made, people just don't care anymore, then we should look within ourselves. Isn't it? Confirmed by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. One may have some idea of what is Krishna's interest, but one better be able to confirm that by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Otherwise, accept that's not in Krishna's interest. If the Vaishnavas become disturbed, then one's not acting in Krishna's interest.